What we're, as Carolyn mentioned, we're talking about apprenticing. The series is actually called Truth and Lies, and we're going to kind of get into that part of the series. And the way we're getting into truth and lies is we're going to consider all of the rabbis of this world, not just religious, but all of the rabbis of this world and the yoke that they would like to place on human beings. The yoke meaning their teaching, their interpretation of what is right and what is wrong and what is the flourishing kind of life, the good kind of life. So we're going to spend some time just thinking about the Rabbi Jesus and the other rabbis of this world and the kinds of things that they're inviting us into, often when we don't even know that. We don't even know that that's what they're doing for us. This morning, though, before we start in a couple of weeks jumping into the truth and lies, I want to spend one more Sunday just thinking about the yoke of the Rabbi Jesus. The yoke being his interpretation of the Torah and how he imagines what human flourishing looks like, what it looks like to live the eternal kind of life or the good life in Jesus. Years ago, our son, we have four kids. Our third is Mason, one girl, two boys, and another girl. Our third is Mason. And Mason and Caleb and I, his older brother, were in the backyard. This was in Arkansas. And we were playing catch with a baseball. In my family growing up, baseball was the only sport. We moved here, and as soon as Mason saw lacrosse, he ditched baseball for good and broke my heart. I wrote him out of the will the minute he did that. But Caleb and Mason and I were in the backyard, and we were playing catch. And Caleb was older, so he could throw it harder and a little more accurately. But Mason was 5 years old. And Mason and I together were frustrated because he could not throw the ball right. You know, I mean, he's five, so like, you know, expectations, how does a five-year-old throw the ball? But when Caleb was five, he could throw the ball straight and hard. And Mason could not throw the ball right. And I was frustrated with him, like, Mason, here, you know, showing him how to do it. You reach back and you throw the baseball and you're a rush. You have to be able to throw a baseball. That's what we do. You know, we love Jesus and we throw baseballs. And he couldn't do it. He was getting frustrated and I was getting frustrated. And there was a moment where I'd thrown it to him and he dropped it and he leaned over to pick up the ball and he stepped on his glove and kind of tripped. His ball, the ball and the glove are on the ground, and he picks the ball up without thinking with his left hand and throws a strike to me. Oh, Mason is left-handed. We did not know this. That's why we celebrated. It was like Christmas and New Year all in one. We celebrated. This son of mine has come home. He is saved. He can throw a baseball too. We went straight to Walmart and bought him a left-handed glove because he's a lefty. All right, I just want you to think about that for a moment. It has everything to do with Jesus and discipleship, I promise. All right. If you wouldn't mind, stand for the reading of the scriptures this morning. I'm going to read two different texts, one in Matthew chapter 5. And then another in Matthew chapter 11. Both of these are teachings of Jesus, and I want to spend a little bit of time this morning considering how they might be in conflict with one another, at least at first glance. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 38. This is the middle of the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth." In other words, you have heard other rabbis say this. "But I say to you, do not resist an evildoer. If anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, give your coat as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go also a second mile." The teachings of the Rabbi Jesus. This is Jesus' yoke that he invites his disciples to take up. Then in Matthew chapter 11, this is what Jesus says about his yoke, this kind of teaching that he has been giving to his apprentices. "Come to me, all you who are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." All right, be seated. I want us to think about this for a moment. The Sermon on the Mount is full of these kinds of teachings that we read in chapter 5, where Jesus cites what his audience might have heard from other rabbis. "You have heard it said." but I say to you. You have heard it said, but I say to you. And it's consistent throughout the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus takes the teaching, the yoke of another rabbi, he states that yoke, and then he ups the ante. He raises the bar, or maybe a better way of saying it, he goes deeper into apprenticeship and discipleship. You've heard it said you shouldn't lust, but or you shouldn't commit adultery, but I'm telling you, even if your eye wanders and you lust, you are. Over and over again, Jesus dives deeper into what it looks like to be an apprentice. He raises the bar. And then he says in chapter 11, hey, come follow me. I'm going to offer you rest. Compared to the yokes of the rabbis in this world, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Do you see a potential conflict here? I haven't always in my journey with Jesus considered commitment to Jesus and the Jesus way easy. In fact, often it seems to me that all of the other options, they seem easier than the Jesus option. Have you noticed this? How can it be said that the commitment to the Jesus way, that is not only not revenge but forgiveness for my enemies, is easier and lighter than taking revenge and being committed to hatred toward my enemies? Well, there are lots of answers to that question, but I want to throw out two this morning. Here's the question: how is living for myself a harder path than a life of self-giving love? Because that's essentially what it comes down to, isn't it? In this series, we're going to talk about all of the rabbis of this world and their version of what the good life is. And the thread that runs through all of the versions is living for myself. That's the thread. That is the culture of the good life outside of the kingdom of God, living for myself. And the question that we ask, if we're going to commit to this rabbi, is how is it that living a life of self-giving love is easier and lighter than living a life of selfishness? Have you ever thought about that? So I want to throw out two possibilities this morning, both in sync with one another. One is, this is my claim. My claim is that being an apprentice of Jesus and living one's life in the Jesus way is natural. And living a life that isn't in the Jesus way is unnatural. When Mason was throwing with his right hand, it wasn't natural for him. He couldn't throw it correctly. Something was off. It wasn't how his body was designed to operate. But when he, on accident, discovered that he was left-handed, he discovered what was natural for him, how his body was designed to work. And when he discovered how his body was designed to work, throwing was easier. I want to claim that unlike what is often the claims, not only out in the world, but in the church, and that is that living a life in the Jesus way is what we were designed to do. When we lean into the Jesus way, even though sometimes it seems like it's not lighter and easier, it seems on first glance that it is more difficult, I'm claiming that if we lean into the Jesus way, we discover while living this way that this is what we were born to be. All of the other lies of all of the other rabbis were contrary to how we were designed, not just in our birth, but especially in our rebirth, when we were raised up out of the watery grave and declared newborn in the kingdom of God. We experience new creation in ourselves. And every time we protest the kind of life that is promoted in the world, self-serving, and lean into the Jesus way, we discover that this is how our lives were designed to be lived. Paul believed this in Ephesians chapter 4. Just a couple of verses. This is what Paul wrote. Now this, in verse 17, now this I affirm and insist on in the Lord. You must no longer walk as the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their minds. In other words, you stop walking backwards. Stop walking right-handed when you're left-handed. The Rabbi Jesus invites you to walk a particular way. And the beginning of this is to protest the way that you used to walk. Stop walking that way. I want to invite you into a way that looks so foreign and backward to the rest of the world, but it's actually forward movement. It is the way that you've been designed to walk. Stop walking backward, he says. And then in verse 18, they are, the Gentiles, they are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of their ignorance and hardness of heart. They have lost all sensitivity, have abandoned themselves to licentiousness, greed, to practice of every kind of impurity. This isn't just a list of right and wrong. If you go back and like look at those words that he uses, darkened, alienated, loss of sensitivity, abandoned. Paul is describing one kind of way of living and another kind of way of living. It's not just this random list of rules of do's and don'ts that make one righteous or unrighteous. It is a whole way of being oneself. Who am I? Who are you? Paul believes that the way many human beings live is the backward way, and they are not being themselves. How ironic that a self-serving life is not one's true self. Have you ever thought about that before? A life that is so centered on the self and every act is to serve the self is not the true self. The true self was designed to be something completely other than that. There's a reason why we have a world full, and even ourselves at times, full of people who in their self-centeredness are miserable. In a life full of aiming to please oneself, all of the selves find themselves miserable. They're trying to be right-handed in a left-handed world. But Paul gives a different invitation in verse 20. That's not the way you learned Christ. For surely you have heard about him and were taught in him, as truth is in Jesus, to put away your former way of life, your old self, corrupt and deluded by its lusts, and to be renewed in the spirit of your minds, and to clothe yourselves with the new self, created according to the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. You ever read that passage before? Paul isn't just saying there's a list of do's and there's a list of don'ts. There's a right and there's a wrong. Paul is saying there are different ways of inhabiting the world, and there are many ways that are not your true self. They're corrupted and abandoned and insensitive and backwards, and I'm inviting you into the new created way that he describes as likeness of God. My claim is that you and I were created to be like God. And that the Jesus way is an invitation back into the life that you were created to live. The turning away from self-serving and all of the rabbis that are related to that kind of a world. The taking on of a yoke that seems harder because it's so other. But the mystery within the new life is that it's easy. It's easy once you begin to, I don't mean like it's always easy to perform because we battle against ourselves, but the air that one breathes in the new life is meant for that human being. The human being finds, the more he or she leans into the Jesus way, that this is what he or she has been missing their entire lives, you know? Have any of you discovered that? The aha moments, the rebirth moments, when you feel like you've been such a knucklehead, you just couldn't see it because you were blinded by other desires or just immersed in other kinds of ways of living, and you discover another nugget of the way that it means to walk after Jesus, and it seems right. You know what I mean? Like when you lived your life refusing to forgive, serving the self by lighting that flame of anger and bitterness and hatred. And then the rabbi invites you to consider forgiveness. It seems so hard. It seems so much harder than anger. But the truth is, a life full of anger is a hard life to live. It's right-handed when you are left-handed. The invitation from Jesus is, look, I want you to take my yoke upon you. Like, let me tell you something. Everybody else is whispering that that's a really hard life, the following of Jesus. But they don't know the secret. It's the life you were meant to live. You're going to love it. You're going to love it so much, you'll be willing to die for it. Well, that's possibility number one. All right. I want to throw a partner to that. Possibility number two. Why Jesus can say, you have heard it said, but I'm saying, he raises the bar. He invites the disciple into more, and how he can call that light and easy. There's a story in the Gospel of Matthew. It's in a couple of the Gospels. There's a story in which a young man comes to Jesus and begins to ask him questions about the good life. We read that and we sort of think he's just, because of the way we've been wired, we think he's just talking about heaven. But he's talking about what Dallas Willard calls the eternal kind of life. What does it look like for me to enter into eternity, he asks. And Jesus has this conversation with him, and it begins with sort of just basic obedience. What does the law say? What do the scriptures say? Are you following those? And the young man says, I've obeyed all of those laws. I don't think he's being arrogant here. He's just saying, I have been a person who has lived his life trying to abide by the teachings of the Torah. And Jesus says, well, it's similar to the Sermon on the Mount, where he's like, you've heard it said, but if you want to take the graduate course, you want to dive deeper. Jesus says to the young man, well, he essentially says, if you want to live, if you really want to live, if you want to pick up the ball with your left hand instead of your right, let me tell you, go sell all that you have and give it to the poor and come follow me. And now we have spent the rest of our lives trying to figure out a way to teach that passage that wouldn't require for us to give away too much. It seems so, how is that easy? How is that light to go give away all of the things that I've worked for and what comes along with that, security and peace of mind, to give it all away and go follow Jesus? Even Jesus' disciples are bothered by this. They begin to have a conversation with him about this ask that Jesus has made. And Jesus says to them, yeah, it's really hard for rich people to find the eternal kind of life. The disciples are flabbergasted by this because they thought richness was a sign of God's favor. How is it that if the disciples say, well, if it's hard for them, then how's their hope for any one of us? And Jesus says this thing that I feel like we misinterpret. Jesus says in chapter 19 of Matthew, verse 26, for mortals, it's impossible. But for God, all things are possible. You ever heard that before? There's this way that we treat that sometimes. as if Jesus is saying, you can't do it. And part of coming to the realization of what it means to be a disciple is you just can't do it. And so thank God Jesus died on the cross for your sins because you can't do it. But that's not what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying, this is really hard for someone who's been listening to the rabbis of wealth and self-service. They find it nearly impossible to let go of that and enter into the kingdom of heaven. It's hard for mortals to do that, but it's not impossible for God. For God to do what? That's the question, isn't it? For God to do what? Based on everything else that Jesus does and says to his disciples, he's got to be saying, it's not impossible for God to bring you to that place. Jesus isn't saying, well, it's impossible, and so our entire gospel is we can do nothing, and so we're thankful for God's forgiveness because we can do nothing. Jesus is consistently, over and over again, inviting people to do something. Something that seems impossible for them, but with God's help, the human beings, the apprentices of Jesus, can find themselves living that kind of life. Are you with me, church? Do you hear the difference between the two? And so here's one of the things I want to suggest that makes the life of Jesus easy and light. It's easy and light because God is there. The most backward way to live is to live a life without God. The hardest kind of life, the most burdensome kind of life, is the life without God. And the invitation into the life where God is easy and light. Are you with me? Jesus is saying, I want to invite you into a world that's so other than what you've ever experienced. And I want to do it every day. I mean, Carolyn's been around campus for 53 years, but she's only 50, so it's weird. I don't know how that works out. 54, sorry, I don't want to rob you of that 1 year. And tomorrow, Jesus will continue to invite her into something new. She is still his apprentice. And everything, Carolyn, that Jesus invites you to live is easy and light because God is there. The other choices are absent of God. You may have other rabbis and other practices that seem alluring because they seem less burdensome and easier, but they turn out to be hard because God's not there. This path that Rabbi Jesus is inviting us into is life with God. And life with God transforms apprentices into his likeness. I don't want you to say, it's impossible for us. Thank goodness that God's got us covered. I want you to say, without God, I would never become what I am becoming. God is making me something. God is making me new. Every time I protest the practices of those rabbis and I enter into Rabbi Jesus' way of living, God is doing something in me. He's making me new. There's a reason why Carolyn can stand up and say, the lights are in my eyes, but you're beautiful. You know? You have apprenticed with Jesus. You didn't get to be who you are because you're stubborn or because you work harder than everyone else. You've got to be the beauty that you are because you've chosen a life that is in partnership with God. Jesus calls that easy and light. All right, church, stand with me. I'm not sure we got there, but I'm going to keep trying in the rest of the series, I promise. We will have a Sunday where David Mathis gets up and explains it all. in 15 minutes. It drives me nuts the way he does that. All the things I've been trying to say. All right, I want to remind you real quickly that I've given you two assignments. I'm going to give you a third now. One is to keep reading the Sermon on the Mount. By the way, the end of the Sermon on the Mount gives another reason why the Jesus way is considered light compared to the other ways. Be reading the Sermon on the Mount each week as much as you can. I asked you last week to try within the week to tell someone, what do you think, well, this is what I think God is apprenticing me in right now. I want us to learn to be able to talk about that freely. That this is what God's working on in my life. This is what I'm learning. This is the challenge. This is the new thing that he's called me into. And then thirdly, I want to challenge you this week to look for something in your life that's old. Yeah, but all of us, we're imperfect. So we all have, oh man, Adam just patted Tim Dunn on the back. That was so wrong. So wrong. Not that kind of old. All right, let me rephrase. Look for something in your life that's still a part of the old self and challenge it. Because the way we learn the Jesus way is by actually walking and living it out. And so I just want to ask you to do that. Teenagers, this week, is there some part of your existence that you know it's a part of the old self, not the new self? Maybe the way I talk about others. Maybe the way I think about myself. Maybe the way I spend my money or spend my time or whatever it is. It's a part of the allure of the old self. I want to ask you, don't feel shame about it. Challenge it this week. Look at it, protest it, and experiment leaning into the Jesus way. And see if you don't find that it's easier and lighter and that you've been left-handed all along and you just didn't know it. All right, let's say this psalm together, Psalm 73, before we continue in worship. Say it with me. Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire other than you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but you are the strength of my heart and my portion forever. For me, it is good to be near you. Let's worship together.